So beginning again, there's always the possibility to reconnect, to start again. When feeling lost, caught, just beginning again. There's always the possibility to reconnect with bodily life, the body living, the body breathing. We're tremendously helped by softening the relationship and attitude to ourselves, to meet ourselves with care and kindness, friendliness. If you notice yourself being hard, strict, pushing, easily dissatisfied, if you're short with yourself, if your comments, your internal comments, are hard and sharp, notice it. And know that the nature of awareness is completely open. That hardness and tightness is extra. And it makes the practice hard and challenging. Most of what we need to do, and we have already done it, all of us, is to show up. Just to take the seat on the chair or the cushion, was to show up for ourselves. So we continue today to establish presence and awareness, to link one moment of presence to the next by being wakeful and present in the body and the body breathing, the experience of the breath in the body in a straightforward, intimate, immediate way. We don't need images of the breath. We don't need to control it. We don't need to guide it. We need to come in contact. And we can notice the ways in which we contract the habitual patterns. Particularly in the beginning of a retreat, whether you've done many or this is the first time, there are forces of reactivity and resistance that emerge within the body and mind. Emerges in the mind as patterns of thoughts and images, and in the body as a felt sense of reactivity or contraction. And these reactive states may seem intensely personal, and we may read a lot into them, interpret them, but actually they've been happening for meditators and spiritual practitioners since beginning of time. It's part of practice. One such inner reaction is that of restlessness. Restlessness in the mind when thoughts are scattered all over the place, shifting, changing, associating, commenting. We're busy in the mind. We can't quite settle. We can't find ground for ourselves. And restlessness in the body can be excruciating. Tinglings like ants under the skin. The impulse to open the eyes, to look around, to get some stimulation, to to find relief by moving. Perhaps you found yourself sort of shifting in your seat, not quite like that, unable to settle. The most important thing is to recognize restlessness as restlessness, to call it by its true name, rather than being lost in the stories about it and the excuses and the comments and the explanations. Recognize restlessness where restlessness appears. Keep it simple. Each time we recognize restlessness, our inner space has the possibility to open up. Awareness expands. We can also apply a kind of counterforce. So when we're restless in the mind, and we're all over the place, and the body is shifting, the many impulses to scratch, to move, to open the eyes, apply the opposite, but not in a harsh way. Restlessness is best met by staying steady. If your impulse is to open the eyes and look around, keep the eyes gently closed. If the impulse is to move, to shift, because the restlessness is intense within the body, stay, sit upright. Take the place and the seat, sit like a mountain. And there are other times and situations when it's really appropriate to open the eyes and to move and shift the posture. But when it comes to restlessness, recognize restlessness. Name it for yourself and stay. Other times we may be hit by a wave of drowsiness, sleepiness, drifting, dreamlike states, kind of sleepy confusion, a lazy, perhaps resistant feeling. We're kind of sinking below the surface. Sometimes we're genuinely fatigued if we're ill, or if we're sleep deprived, we may actually be tired. The body is tired, it's natural. And there is no big deal if we fall asleep. The ground is not so far away, at least not if you're sitting on a cushion. So nothing bad will happen. It's just sleepiness. But sleepiness also comes like a reactive force in the mind, an inability to gather oneself. So if you find that you become sluggish, see how you can support yourself. One possibility is to stretch your arms up above your head, straight up, and do your meditation practice like this. Just sit like this. You can sit for the whole meditation period or for some time, and it brings some more flow and energy to the system. You could also choose to stand up and do standing meditation. Any time during the sitting meditation, when you find that you start to nod and swing on the seat, you can stand up and continue the practice standing. It's also possible at times to have the eyes gently open, but to look just a little bit in front of you, but not at anything in particular, to keep a kind of soft focus. So the eyes are open to allow light to come in, but not to look around at things or to look at anything in particular. That's also a possibility, a kind of counterforce. Our heart and mind becomes alert, activated, bright, sensitive when there is interest. So when we smell something wonderful and we're fully there, in contact, intimate with the smell, with the awareness of breathing in the body, we need to allow our attention and awareness to become more subtle, more nuanced, sensitive to details. Then the mind brightens. We support the awareness becoming more sensitive, more subtle, by noticing details. Notice the beginning of the in-breath, the actual sensation of breathing. And in this way, the mind becomes interested. When we're sleepy, we become too general, too drifty. Notice the particular, the suchness of the moment, and in this way, support contact, support intimate connection and brightness. So when sleepy, gather the attention. Gather it in. Make use of the possibility to have the mind and the attention be concentrated, focused. Make use of the possibility to focus. Another reactive force in the mind that contracts the natural vastness of awareness and presence is doubt and worry. When we're doubting, we tend to go up in the mind and we start to think about things. We start to compare. There's a perfect place in life for clear evaluation of things, whether something is appropriate or good. But doubt has a way of undermining us and undermining our intentions, our effort, and our willingness and capacity to engage. Doubt is this questioning that starts to question whether, am I doing it right? Is it right? Should I be doing something else? It's an unsettled feeling in the heart and mind, and we can recognize it. Name doubt as doubt. Oh, doubting. There is doubting again. Yet another reactive force is that of desire, of wanting. When we float out in our fantasies about things to do, to experience, to have, to achieve, we play out scenarios of whatever it might be, could be, oh, lunchtime, or when I get home. Or perhaps you've spotted somebody here on the retreat and you haven't spoken, and you just like the way they take the porridge in the morning, or how he or she walks. And then there is just this silent love affair. And before you know it, you've planned vacations and bought a house and gone hiking in Lapland, children, animals, pension plan. You never spoken. Desire knows no limits, has no shame, and has no ground in reality. So in life, it's fine to have preferences, what we like to eat and do and experience. We can all have preferences, things we like. We're different. But it's important to recognize desire, because it takes us, takes all of us for a ride that never ends. At the heart of desire is a kernel of truth, like a gold nugget. It's the true wanting, the true yearning, what we really desire. But in order to find that gold nugget of our deepest heart's desire, we need to recognize the habitual force of desire. Oh, I should go for a swim. Oh, I want to... It's always on the way, leaning forward. Desire projects us out into an imaginary future that's not yet there, because we're here. So we can recognize desire instead of being lost in the storyline, the inner film, the images. And then the final of these five classical hindrances, instead of aversion, of dislike, not wanting, of pushing away, we start to hate things. It may be memories, it may be related to ideas in the mind. And often, just to our experience right now. Let's say there is a discomfort in the shoulders. It's uncomfortable. Heat, prickly sensations, tightness, pressure, achiness. Usually we call that pain. Or the shoulder pain that's always there. That's the story in the mind and the concept. We're fast in applying concepts such as the pain. In practice, we're more helped by noticing the actual phenomena, not the concept, not the label. We don't need to like uncomfortable sensations. And why should we? They're uncomfortable. When there is discomfort in the body, it affects our state of being. It affects the heart. That's true. But a force of reactivity bounces off the tightness and the heat in the shoulder and contracts the entire field, the heart and the mind, with a big no. I can't stand it. And then the story, if this is going to continue for 45 minutes, then I'll die. I will never do this again. This must be wrong. And then it goes on and on and on and on and on. We can get really angry. We may be reactive to the food or how the gravel feels underneath our feet when we do walking meditation, how somebody breathes or coughs or moves. Reaction in the mind is usually something we feel embarrassed and ashamed of when we become hateful. But it's something that happens. And what is needed is to recognize and to not be caught in the storyline. When it comes to physical sensations, to continue today to stay present with the experience of breathing while open to the whole of the body, using the body breathing as the anchor, as the base, as the point to return to, or the territory to return to, reference point. And at times there will be particular intensifications of discomfort somewhere in the body. That's natural, it happens. See if you can relax around those areas of tension, to not accumulate suffering by tensing up in the mind and the heart as well. It's enough with the achiness or the heat in the shoulder, but can the rest of the body be relaxed? Can the belly be soft, even though there is hurting in the shoulder? So we can notice the discomfort and see where it's possible to relax and if it's possible to remain steady, to recognize the aversion and the reactivity, the anger and hatefulness in the mind as a force without taking it too personal and judge ourselves for it, but to recognize it clearly. And instead of being taken by that ride, support steadiness. Recognizing doubt and worry, internal wavering, recognize it. Recognizing desire, wanting, hunger for. Recognizing restlessness. Recognizing sleepy, drifty, foggy. This is a good use of the thinking mind to put a very transparent, soft label, just as if you would have a jar of jam. You put a label on it, but this label is transparent and with very soft writing. And it just recognizes and says, restlessness, doubt. And then back to the breath. No need to fix it or solve it or analyze it further. No need to understand where it originates from. Just recognize it in the same way as looking outside and saying, oh, clear sky, strong wind, snow, rain, sunshine.
Taking a moment to notice what it's like for you when the bell rings. It's interesting, there's often the sense of, made it. You know, somehow we've got through to that place where the bell rings, and sure, there's a understandable release and maybe relief when we can unfold our posture a little bit or move in some way. And yet, the interesting thing is that the moment after the bell rings isn't really that different than the moment before it rings. But somehow there's often just the sense of, ah, made it. And it's really interesting just to see what it's like to stay attentive and present and kind of bringing that sense of awareness to the moment after as well. To include that. So we don't just somehow sort of burst out of the meditation into what's next. With this practice, our invitation and encouragement is very much to allow it to include the wholeness of our day, the wholeness of our experience. And so, in noticing those different factors or tendencies of mind that can arise in the sitting, as Leela was speaking about, of restlessness and agitation, drowsiness, sleepiness, of doubt and confusion, of craving and wanting, or resistance and not liking, not wanting. To notice these experiences too as we go into the day, where they show up, as we engage in the walking meditation. Sometimes the very thought of walking meditation produces the response of, I don't want to. And to see, well, what's that? It's just this I don't want. It's actually, you know, if we were to describe to our friends what was being suggested back home, they'd say, you know, so they want you to walk on some grass in the sun, back and forth, no hurry, don't have to carry a big bag on your shoulder, no one counting how many times you do it and whether you've done it well. What's the problem? Yeah? And yet we know the problem. The problem, or what's challenging, is that there's this kind of pull towards being unconscious, getting lost in busyness and doing things and productivity and something that looks like it's going somewhere. And the very fundamental thing about walking meditation, as we've said, it's not going anywhere. And what's it like for us to do something that's, from most conventional viewpoints, it's useless? It's unproductive. Now, of course, from a practice point of view, it's not at all useless or unproductive. And in fact, the walking is very much the way in which we learn to weave together the activities and the wholeness of our life. That when we associate meditation with a kind of a stillness or emotionlessness and a kind of a withdrawal from experience, so our eyes are closed, we hope there's not too much noise, the body's pretty still most of the time, things really are quiet, and that's very helpful for the kind of deepening or the deepening capacity to feel and experience more subtle levels of our experience. Not so much being dependent on strong, intense, or powerful stimulation to be awake, to be interested. And that's really helpful. Really supports a quietening. In the walking, there's more going on. There's more activity. And the opportunity to include what comes in, what moves, what we feel, is something really important. So that the experience of being awake, the quality of presence, of awareness that we're learning to more fully inhabit, isn't something that picks and chooses amongst experience, for this is the conditions that I want and those conditions are unwished for. It's much more universal in its capacity, in that sense of really an openness to whatever comes. So when you go to your place or find a place of walking, just even noticing how we might have an idea of where a really nice place to walk will be. We've already figured out perhaps the best place. And it could be a little bit of, you know, hope that I'll get it, and fear that someone else will get there first, and I should have sat by the door so I could be out and get there to that nice spot with the view and no traffic and all of that. Or just see how quickly we do that. And actually, can we just see where we end up? Just walk and see where we find a place that someone else isn't already inhabiting, and say, maybe that's good enough. And to walk, in the beginning, really giving primary attention to the feet touching the ground, becoming sensitive again to that field of aliveness. Like the soles of our feet are incredibly sensitive organs. And because of that, precisely because of that, most of our lives we wrap them in very firm and solid things to stop us having to feel anything, what we call shoes. The great advantage of shoes is you don't have to be mindful of your feet when you're walking in the world. You don't actually have to pay attention, and you're not likely to get hurt if you've got a good pair of shoes on. I'm not saying you have to take your shoes off, but when we feel the sensitivity of our feet, we realize, oh, these are something I really want and need to pay attention to. It really serves us to pay attention to this experience. And there's something that can actually become quite delicious in the sensitivity of our feet in contact with the earth as a primary reference point. And the feet, of course, being connected to our legs. So as we walk, we begin also to notice what it's like as the muscles of the legs engage and lift the foot. And what happens is they relax and place the foot back down, or some of them relax. It's a pretty complicated process, actually. But in the end, the movement of walking is just about engaging and then releasing certain muscles in a certain pattern. And it's not that we've got to figure out which muscle is doing what. I'm not trying to kind of do some biological analysis here of the technique of walking. It's more like, oh, what's it like to be in that experience as it happens? And yet going nowhere. Seeing that as we do that, there's a natural sensitivity and a natural connection that starts to emerge. And that so much of our busyness in looking for experience and trying to get somewhere or do something or become someone is trying to fill that actually deep inner yearning for connection and sensitivity. And yet, because it's so often externalized, it doesn't do that. We just keep looking and seeking for something, and the things we're pursuing don't fulfill us. And so it's a quieter, a less obvious potential for fulfillment or nourishment that arises just in walking and being in contact with the body, going back and forth. And you may become more aware as you start to center and establish yourself of the effect of the sun and the wind, the air in its coolness and the warmth of the sunshine, and what that's like. And you may notice that I've seen myself sometimes finding a walking path, and just because living in England, I didn't see the sun so much, at least I tell myself, it's sort of finding, I should find a place in the sun, it's good for me, you know. My skin needs that vitamin D production. And it's true, we need some of that. But sometimes it's kind of a little addictive as well. And sometimes noticing that my walking path is slowly moving as the shadow of the tree moves, so that I don't end up in the shade. And just making the conscious choice, oh, what if I just walk into the shade too? Other times, of course, it might be really hot and we're staying in the shade. We don't want to go in the sun. Notice what that's like, just to say, I don't have to hold it so tightly. Or another way to put it, to not be so unconsciously conditioned and driven by our unconscious patterns of what we think we need or want. Becoming aware of them. And in that awareness, there's a freedom, there's a choice to see, oh, sometimes, yeah, it's appropriate. But other times, there's actually greater benefit in letting go of that urge to have it just so. And see what it's like without that. And so walking back and forth. If you find it useful to stand still for a while, and for some people and for myself, certainly in walking, I might sometimes spend as much time standing as I do walking. Beginning, having come to a place and just standing for a while, walking to the end. And rather than having to suddenly turn around and go back, sometimes just stopping and just waiting to see when does the movement or the urge arise to come back. Okay, can come back now. So like we get extra points for going back and forth more times. Really? We don't get extra points for going more slowly than anybody else, taking really slow steps. But if it seems to be useful for you to really slow down, that's fine. But there's no inherent value in the speed. One can actually be mindful walking at quite a quick pace. And sometimes if there's more energy or agitation or drowsiness, both of those tendencies, sometimes it's useful to walk a bit more briskly to begin with. Just back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And then stop and breathe a couple of times and then start to slow down. So just listening and exploring what's actually useful for you without having some absolute idea of how it should be or what's right. Because what's useful, and that's what we're interested in, what's useful will change. We can't assume we know what's going to be most useful, because that's always going to be coming from the past. Those certainties and knowledges, and sure, there's learning and experience and it's valuable and important, but it always needs to be, in a way, brought fresh into the conditions and circumstances where we are to see, okay, what's useful here? Without trying to get it right and find the best exact way to do it every time. Because that also becomes a little bit of, or can become a little bit of an obsession. It's more just to be open to see how it works. To listen to yourself. As we quiet and as we settle, I think there's a quieter wisdom that starts to speak to us. That isn't about getting it right or being perfect or the best or whatever, but it's more about, oh yeah, this seems to offer some possibility that's useful or that's fruitful. Or that's interesting to me to want to explore. So what's it like if I really feel the step? Not just sort of my foot over there touching the ground and I'm kind of watching it from a distance, but what if I'm really there? So continuing in this practice, we'll come back again for the next sitting at 11 o'clock. And before that time, it would be good, if you haven't already, to check the notice board in the middle of the dining room, where there's a list. It's printed in rather small letters. I hope I can't read it without some reading glasses, but I hope you can, or have the glasses you need. Just to check, we've organized you into groups, and which we'll be meeting with you, and two of the groups will meet today, and two of them tomorrow. And Leela will meet with, I think, group one, and I'm meeting with group two. And we'll be meeting with you out there beside, or possibly inside, depending what we work out, the sauna building. We'll be outside, we've decided. Okay. Do you think you know with regard to the other one? Shall we say that, or shall I say where exactly at the end of the next one?
Okay. So for my group, we'll try to meet down where the fireplace is, near the water. Bring a sun hat if you like. If it's too warm or too sunny, we'll find another place, but we'll start there.
And for group two, we'll meet in the covered space just beside the sauna building down here near the water. So I'll get some chairs and you'll see where it is. But what that means is when we have those groups, I'll mention this again after the next sitting, that those spaces won't be available for other activities, just for that period. So we'll have the group meetings today for groups 1 and 2, and then tomorrow groups 3 and 4 will meet also. So we'll meet all of you in these next 2 days. And over the course of the retreat, you will meet with both of us in groups. And we'll also begin tomorrow also offering individual spaces for meetings if you might like to speak to either of us one-to-one. And with that, as I think we already mentioned, if there's something that feels that it can't wait for the group or that one-to-one opportunity that you really need to speak to one of us about something that's happening, going on for you, please feel free to write a note to let us know and we'll arrange a time for that with you. So, time for walking, and we'll come back again at 11 o'clock.